What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Of course, the iconic Hamilton. If you are going to see it while it plays here in Ireland at the Borgosh Theatre, just know that I am incredibly jealous. I was meant to go last week, but I was sick and couldn't go. And you can't get tickets for love nor money. But some of my colleagues here at News Talk were there during the week and said it is utterly incredible. The voices of the actors are stunning. And of course, the soundtrack is just iconic. If you haven't seen it, and if you don't have tickets, head on over to Disney Plus and watch it. I guarantee you, you will love it. The soundtrack is one of my top listened to things on Spotify. And if you are interested in American history, it's an eye-opener. If you're not, it's just a captivating story. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius. Not to overstate it, but he firmly is. So I am obsessed. But yeah, if you're going, enjoy. I'm green with envy. But on we go. It's been a busy week in the world of Meta. We got some new insights into hardware, including what they're saying is the most sophisticated augmented reality glasses. There have been some interesting images of Mark Zuckerberg wearing them. But closer to home, we had a press release issued by the Data Protection Commission on Friday afternoon telling us that they issued a fine against Meta Ireland of €91 million. Technology journalist Emmett Ryan is with me now. Emmett, what was this fine for?
This fine was essentially for laziness, is how I describe it, Jess. So it turns out Facebook's method of storing user passwords was best described as not exactly good. They were using plain text, which is what it sounds like. It's a format that is plain and clear and therefore legible if you can access it, where the norm would be for it to be an encrypted format, essentially, for the storage. This essentially was not that, and that's very bold when it comes to protecting user data. So they have added to their pile of fines, essentially. Like, this case dates back all the way to 2019, and it had inadvertently, Meta said, done this storing again on plain text, which is basically like if you wrote the password on a post-it note and stuck it to the table. It's almost as bad as that. But like, we're at a level now where I can see, you know, one publication, the Indo, has, in order for us to keep track, listed off the assorted fines Meta has received across its different brands. Obviously, Facebook, when it was just called that, when the whole company was going through Instagram, WhatsApp, and the mothership of Meta itself. So, yeah, it's quite hilariously stupid, to be honest, because normally, you know, we expect something complicated, something hard to explain on the radio, but nope. They did the equivalent of writing down user passwords on a post-it note, realized they'd done this, and have now sought some form of forgiveness, but have been fined a great deal of money for it instead.
Yeah, the article that you referred to by Adrian Weckler, so just to talk you through some of these numbers. So Facebook, it's 1.76 billion. Instagram, 595 million. WhatsApp, 230.5 million. And then Meta in March 22 got 17 million. Like, this is now 91 million added in as well. these huge, hefty sums of money, like, I know we can kind of say, like, it's loose change to them, but it is, like, it's a significant penalty for a company of this ilk. But do you think that that the fines are sufficient? Does that go far enough?
Well, kind of a strange one, because on the one hand, obviously, I think it has very little impact at all on the behavior of the companies, given how basic a mistake we're describing here. Just, they're still making mistakes this basic. I think it's clear the fines don't go far enough. But we're reaching a stage now where fines to Meta are, and this sounds hilariously stupid to say, but it's kind of worrying, are becoming an important part of the Exchequer's annual income. You know, it's like that they're almost relying on fining Meta a certain amount in order to do it. I'm not saying they're doing it deliberately. The point is that money is becoming so reliable at this stage that it's almost becoming a key factor in the Exchequer's annual planning.
Yeah. Now, Meta, for many of these fines, and you alluded to it, like that this investigation or inquiry was initiated back in 2019. It relates to something that happened back in 2019. You'd like to think that corrective measures have been put in place. But it's also a bit unnerving, Emmett, to think that in 2024, big powerhouses, despite all of the controversies, like as recently as 2019, are still getting stuff like this wrong.
You know, one of the things I've largely said over the last couple of years is I felt we were seeing a move towards fewer mistakes like this. And when you see something this, again, rudimentary, like it's the type of thing where, frankly, I am stunned that we're talking about something this basic. It's very concerning.
And so I suppose it leads to the question then, because later in the show, we're going to be talking about some scams that are doing the rounds. But I suppose we are trusting that the companies are doing the right thing until regulators like the DPC come into play and put manners back on them.
Sorry, so I have to think about this one, Jess. Like, yeah, like, you know, because we all figured the manners being put on them would do something. But again, I'm just really concerned because when we have all this stuff with scammers, which we're trying to get them to reduce, obviously all the concerns around, you know, when I say fake news, I mean it in the truest sense, as in the, I don't even mean people posting misleading stuff to change opinions. I mean to make you click on a link that turns out to be a virus, which again, concerns me far more than just misleading opinion stuff. Yeah, it's really, really worrying.
Okay, so that's yet another significant fine against Meta. One of the conversations that I think we've spoken about a few times over the years, Emmett, is about the impact of the Data Protection Commission. They got a bit of a bad rep for quite a while. People were saying necessarily that, you know, that they didn't have enough teeth, they didn't have sufficient teeth and all the rest. But we've seen a consistent stream of hefty fines being issued in the last number of years, not just against Meta, but other platforms as well.
Although I suppose the concern just is it's great to see they're issuing the hefty fines, although no one's obviously lowered the big hammer yet, like, but I like to call it death penalty, although hasn't caught on with everybody else, of 4% of annual global turnover. So we haven't seen that one come in yet, which is the one I'm waiting to see. I figure we'd have seen it by now, to be honest. I thought we'd actually see the German regulator in particular go early with it. But even allowing for that, the part I was kind of hoping for, that by now, by this stage in the conversation, we'd be seeing fewer fines because more companies would be investing in avoiding the fines, essentially.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to be fair, I do think companies are trying to still catch up to legislation. And one of the things that I'm often saying on this station is that, you know, we're lucky that we're in the European Union and that the rules and regulations and legislation is there to protect us. But I do wonder, you know, when will the tech companies get ahead of the legislation? Because for such a long time, legislation was behind. Now, particularly when it comes to AI, for example, we're seeing big tech having to put corrective measures in place before they can even launch a product here in Europe.
It's a good thing, obviously, that we, because I think, for, like you were saying, for years it was behind, now we're at least trying to, I don't like the term future-proof, but at least trying to plan for the future with regulation, which is a good thing, because I think the tech companies, they enjoyed being able to just race ahead and wait for regulation to catch up with them, and then they could dally in their own time to observe the regulation, whereas now they don't really have that option. So I feel if we can see more examples of what's happening, like the AI situation in Europe, it'll be a a greater positive across other areas, essentially, of how tech companies operate and gather data and use data. I think that will be important, because the earlier, you know, the rules are laid down, the quicker we'll get these large companies to actually be forced to abide by them without excuses.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, look, obviously, we're going to see how this one plays out and future fines being issued, because hopefully we'll get to a stage where, you know, between the Online Safety Commissioner here in Ireland and the Data Protection Commission, these breaches of GDPR and other legislation become a thing of the past. But again, at the moment, we can just live in hope. Emmett, while I have you, I want to talk about the price increase to YouTube Premium. I got an email the other day saying that the price I'm paying, which is $11.99 a month, is going up to $13.99 a month. What did you make of that increase?
I wasn't entirely surprised, to be honest. Like, I am a YouTube Premium user, I should stress in advance, I pay for it every month. That was essentially so I could use YouTube Music back in the day. Now I hardly ever use YouTube Music, but I still like having the seamless way of watching longer videos, because, you know, you're paying to basically not have ads for people who aren't aware of it. And if you do that, you know, I will say it's a lot more fun experience watching videos than obviously with the cut-ins and all that. So yeah, it's not a huge surprise they've done it. Like, it is the most advertised product, I think, on YouTube is YouTube Premium. It definitely is up there in the top three or four, along with NordVPN and the likes. But like, YouTube Premium certainly goes out of its way to push itself on those who don't already have it. And like, YouTube clearly wants to get more ways to monetize, particularly outside of the US, because in the US it has YouTube TV, where it can sell at much higher rates for a much broader range of product suites that it can't really do in Europe, essentially because it's like showing all of what you would get in cable TV, but through your YouTube is the operative option there at YouTube TV. So as a result, I think for them, the more they can find ways to generate revenue again in non-US places, and obviously the European Union is crucial there, that kind of stands out to me. So it's one thing that stood out to me with the price increases that it's not flat across the board. Now, they aren't the first ones to do it, but I think, you know, it's one of those odd things we haven't mentioned before when talking about price increases, is that Netflix doesn't cost the same everywhere in the world. Neither does Amazon Prime Video, neither does Disney Plus, and neither again does YouTube. So YouTube, you know, it's increase in price, it's between 30% and 50%, I think, depending on what territory you're in. So they're clearly trying to, you know, match the increase with the market, to thinking what the market will tolerate, essentially.
Yeah, and I suppose I was talking to Joe Lynham on Breakfast Business about this on Friday morning, and I think in the era and at a time when we're paying so much for multiple streaming platforms, people do need to remember that they can cancel. Like, you can cancel your Netflix or your YouTube Premium for a month and then go back to it. These aren't 24-month contracts like the old phone bills back in the day. There is an element of control that we have here as well.
It's like, you know, obviously sometimes you can get deals where you might pay for 6 months in advance at a reduced price, but even then that runs out and you're back to paying on a monthly basis. And again, the same monthly rights you were saying. So it's a lot much more manageable than a traditional utility bill, essentially, like a phone, like an electric bill, or like water, anything like that, in that it's like, you know, there is the choice that basically at effectively no notice, you can say, right, that's once this month is done, you're not getting any more money from me, which I suppose puts more pressure on the YouTube Premiums, the Netflixes of this world, to find a price point they reckon their market will be willing to tolerate.
Do you think that now this is me with my tinfoil hat on, right? But do you think that the people who don't pay for YouTube will start seeing more ads? Or will it be the same level of ads? You know, like, I'm wondering, will they try to push people onto the premium just by bombarding them with ads? Because already, like, I find I have YouTube Premium, but some of my friends don't. And when they put YouTube videos on and they get interrupted by these ads, it drives me bananas. So I wouldn't give up my YouTube Premium account. But do you think that we could anticipate more ads coming onto the free version?
Again, it's a case, I think, where usually we're going to measure how much of that they can get away with, because while they obviously want to maximize the amount of ad revenue they can generate from the free version of YouTube, at the same time, they also don't want to, you know, have so many ads that it actually reduces usage rate of YouTube, so that, you know, they will actually reduce their value of the ads. So it's a balancing act again for YouTube, I think. Certainly, they will like try and go right up to that line, but there's all kinds of algorithms being measured here to try and work out where exactly that line is so that they don't cross it.
Yeah, I do want to talk to you, though, with your journalistic hat on for a second. Not that we weren't already, but, you know, there are outlets.
It's my analyst hat, you know.
Yeah, your analyst hat, right? So there are news outlets that have gone behind a paywall. And I think it makes sense because it's a quality product and there's an element of paying for quality. Did YouTube wait too long to start introducing the notion of paid services? Because, you know, when I was growing up, it was completely free and the idea of paying for it was laughable.
Yeah, although you got to think about, they had to work out what they were going to be charging for, essentially. It was, I think, the challenge, because they were effectively running on just, you know, an ad model, simple as. And when they decided to come at premium, they had to work out, well, what are we actually going to charge people for? So that's why YouTube Music was created. There were the YouTube Red series, which didn't really work for them. So they realized original content that they were creating probably wasn't the right way to go around. So they went more with partnerships with certain creators instead, or certain houses in terms of production. But like, they had to sort of work out what was going to be best, because YouTube was basically about, you know, flip it up there and see what happens in terms of video viewing and content and reaction. And obviously that took a while for people to work out what would actually fit that bill, what would actually be successful in the flip it up there and happens model of life. So you take a look at that and you go, right, okay, limitations there. So they probably had to figure out over time what it's going to take. They had a less traditional broadcast model, because from all we can say is, we can all say, well, Netflix was less traditional, yes, but it was still effectively trying to give you movies and TV. YouTube wasn't really. YouTube's trying to now give you everything. And it's, you know, all forms of content to all people when it comes to video, essentially. And that meant that, you know, going for a direct premium model wasn't as straightforward as the others.
Yeah, I suppose I'm intrigued by it, particularly at the time when you could pay for a blue tick on whether it's X or on Instagram. That to me is a no value proposition, right? I don't need a blue tick. I don't care about a blue tick. But to remove ads, I would very much care. Have you ever gone down the route of paying for the blue tick on any of the platforms?
No, it's a short version. I never even contemplated it. I suppose with X/Twitter, it was a case of, I figured it actually might be devaluing to me. And with Meta, I've yet to see what, if any, benefit I would gain from it. Like, at least they are trying to make it a value play, but I just don't feel there's a value play there for me. I have played for the premium version of LinkedIn, but that isn't the blue tick. That's just a premium version of LinkedIn. And again, it's a bit different again there. Like, that's just so I can access more services. So that isn't the case of me, you know, thinking, well, I get to have something fancy on my label now. It's a case of, I get more things out of it, essentially, and I get things that are of value to me as someone who's, especially someone who's working for themselves. So, like, with all these things, whatever you're buying in life, just to be clear, work out if it's got value for you. Because I would always say, for me, the value of YouTube Premium is, if I, you know, really fancy listening to a song that may be harder to find on Spotify, Put Up Under Pressure is a great example of that. I might want to really watch the video, so I can have my screen on lock and still be listening to that, because with Premium, you can listen to it, whereas obviously with the free version, you can't. So it's little things like that. Again, the ads not getting in the way of the different things I'm watching or listening to. All these small little quirks, it's just a smoother, I'm basically paying for a smoother experience where I can do more of the things I want.
Come here to me, what's the benefit of the LinkedIn? What extra bits do you get?
Jesus, I'm trying to actually remember now. I know there's definitely elements when it comes to the search functions regarding, it's in mail, obviously. So when you can send, you know, direct messages to people who aren't actually connected with yet, so many a month. I know there's that. I know there's definitely some aspects when it comes to, like, the search functions. You get a few more variables available to you and the insights as well. So more information, basically, more access to other users.
Interesting. Okay, I might check that out. Emmett Ryan, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining me here on Tech Talk.
Thank you.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.